This is a Carlisle ValueCast, brought to you by the Carlisle Group. ValueCast brings you insights from our One Carlisle network, providing analysis, data, and observations to help you navigate the global economy and top-of-mind issues in news. The Carlisle Group. Invest wisely. Create value.
Greetings and welcome to Carlisle ValueCast. I'm Chris Ullman, head of Carlisle's Global Communications. Today we are discussing the importance of science, technology, engineering, and math, also known as STEM. With us today are Georgette Kaiser, Carlisle's Chief Information Officer and head of the Global Technology and Services Group, and Jackie Roberts, Carlisle's Chief Sustainability Officer. Welcome, Georgette and Jackie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
These days, you hear a lot of talk about STEM and how we need more students, more classes, and more overall commitment to these four fields if the U.S. is to remain competitive in the global economy. Georgette and Jackie are both products of a STEM curriculum and proponents of STEM, and we are eager to pick their brains and get their views on why STEM matters and what can be done about it. Georgette, give us that kind of overall 30,000-foot view on this topic.
STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, math. But at the 30,000-foot level, it fosters logical reasoning thinking. It fosters inquisitive intellectual curiosity. It fosters collaboration amongst a group of people that are in the fields of the sciences. And it's going further now. People are starting to call it STEAM because the A stands for the arts, which people are starting to feel is kind of missing from the overall theme.
So it sounds like STEM is almost a metaphor for a way of thinking.
Because we don't have a lot of people that have the foundation on how to think through a process. And engineering and math, those type of skills help you think methodically through how to do something, helps you with how to approach a problem. A STEM background helps you think about where to start. And you may not be the person that kind of takes it all the way. Someone else may step in and do that, but you can do the initial steps of starting it.
So Jackie, give us the ground level perspective.
I think a lot of the same adjectives apply. The rigor, the logic that comes with being in a STEM field. Those skills are both incredibly important for professional success, but also they come up a lot in life. You've got the ability to not only problem solve, but also look at data and how data informs different problems. The other area that STEM really supports is creativity, and you wouldn't initially think that. But when you are in a field where you're constantly learning about new discoveries and new approaches, those evolutions are constantly throwing new ideas at you that then help you think in an integrated way about problems you're trying to solve.
Jackie, give us an overview of your academic STEM background.
I started becoming interested in sciences in high school. I went to an all-girls school, which I think was really helpful because girls were really encouraged to go into science and math fields, which was a little bit unusual. When I got to college, I took a class and fell in love with environmental issues and environmental problems, and had a professor who said, if you really want to understand how to solve these problems, you should look at majoring in chemical engineering because it is a problem-solving discipline. And so I ended up majoring in chemical engineering and doing projects that were all around environmental problems so that I took a more traditional curriculum and worked it into problems that I cared about. And I had to do some of that matchmaking myself, but it gave me a sense of all of the interesting things I could do with chemical engineering.
When I was younger, I always loved mathematics, and I got my first computer from my mom when I was in middle school, and that got me really interested into computer programming and engineering side of things. In high school, I was accepted into a gifted and talented program for mathematics, and kind of took me to the next level of learning how to solve problems. When I was applying to colleges, I was looking at computer engineering, computer science, mathematics. I love math the most, so I went in as a math major with a computer science concentration at the University of Maryland. But at the Career Center at University of Maryland, I spoke to them and they said, there's another world out there and we're going to expose it to you. And they introduced me to job offerings at NASA, at General Electric, at NSA, and I realized that there's so much more that I could actually do with the way that I've learned how to think through problems.
Our co-founder, David Rubenstein, did one of these podcasts a couple of years ago, and he was extolling the virtues of liberal arts and kind of dissing STEM a bit. Was he right or was he wrong?
I think that there are very strong, intellectually curious people that have good liberal arts degrees. But I really feel like if those with liberal arts degrees and those with STEM degrees come together, that we can solve many of the larger issues that we have across our nation, across our globe. And one of your original questions, I talked about it, people are starting to call it STEAM, and that's that art piece that's starting to kind of come out, that creative and liberal arts side. And that's why the two together, it could be amazing.
The field of STEM has so many different subspecialties. There are a lot of different ways to do STEM. But in college, I actually found a lot of room to do the liberal arts courses, too. We had to, even though I was getting a Bachelor of Science. We also had to meet liberal arts requirements. And I actually did better in my liberal arts classes than I did in my science and engineering classes because they were so hard. Those skills that you learn in liberal arts, which are about communication, written and oral, and also the lessons of history and understanding the role of history in present-day issues. So I think that you can do a bit of both.
Once you were on kind of the STEM pathway, give us a little overview of how it evolved. Georgette?
First, it was hard because typically you're the only female. And so that sometimes feels a little isolated sometimes, but you kind of get over it because you love what you're doing so much that you just don't even think about that. But you want to try to uplift other women along the way to say, hey, you're missing something good that's happening over here. I have gone into so many different parts of businesses with it. I started at General Electric in software engineering, and then I moved into T. Rowe Price, and that was on the whole finance side of things. Within T. Rowe Price, I had lots of different roles that I played dealing with software and infrastructure and going in and working on the executive side to kind of solve bigger problems for the whole company. So it was that type of kind of quantitative analytical thinking that they appreciated. And now here at Carlisle, there are lots of things that we have started to do with respect to our global technology and solutions group. And I've been leveraging data from HR to understand the team, and we've been doing things like Hogan assessments to understand the data, how to get people working together, understanding their skill set. There's just so much that you can do once you have that foundational, quantitative, intellectual kind of thinking with your career.
It opened up so many doors for me and gave me so many more choices than a lot of my peers had from the time I came out of college. So, for example, I really wanted to work on environmental issues. EPA had a hiring freeze on except one category. So if you had a BS in engineering, you were eligible to be hired by EPA. And that's how I got my first job, which was an amazing opportunity. And I went back to graduate school and I did a joint MBA, Master's in Environmental Science. I came out and I was hired by a group called Environmental Defense Fund. And they hired me not because I had an MBA, but because I was a chemical engineer and at least they could fall back on that. I ended up starting a whole program there on corporate sustainability and corporate partnerships. I was able to combine the science and the general environmental issues with a whole background in how to influence businesses. So I think it opens up a whole range of opportunities that one can't predict, but you can take it in so many different directions.
So as women in STEM-oriented careers, what could we be doing to foster a rise in the percentage of women in this area?
I think there are two areas. One is really helping people understand all the fun things you can do with that degree. At any point in my 25-year career, I have been bombarded more in the past 2 years with people who see my title of Chief Sustainability Officer Carlisle and come in and say, I want to do that. That is such a cool job. And it all started with chemical engineering, right? You have to build that path of expertise. We need to show the different endpoints and how varied the different endpoints are. I think that there's also a need to show how varied STEM itself is. Some people really take to biology. Some people really take to physics. Some people are really interested in new technologies. There's a lot of different subspecialties. And you can be bad at one part of that and be good at another part. And a lot of people are, and that's okay as well.
I think it really starts at the younger ages because a lot of young ladies just tend to turn off quickly when it comes to mathematics. I spend a lot of time going into schools and speaking to kids on how important math is for them and doing things for the Girl Scouts, getting the girls to understand that you can do this. So to me, you gotta start at the foundational level. By the time you get to high school, if you haven't had that foundation of being in math and science class and really trying to work to excel in those classes, it'll be very hard to go into a STEM field when you get to college.
The past two summers, I've convinced my daughter to do coding camp by saying, look, I'm not expecting you to be an A-plus computer science coder. I just want you to understand it. And I think that there's a lot of areas in STEM where we have some students who are brilliant at it and could win the next Nobel Prize. But you can also have a very good background in it as a BB plus student and just understand the issues so that you can then apply them. And it's in applications that you solve problems.
I visited a program at the Naval Academy 2 years ago. They have a summer STEM program for girls.
I've looked at that.
It's quite amazing because you have young girls coming in at the middle school level. They've never programmed in their whole life. They have no idea what STEM is. And so I went to their closing ceremony to speak to them and see all their projects. And they were so excited. They're like, this is something like we want to do ongoing. So Naval Academy actually started this new thing. It's called STEM in a Box, where they actually are going into the school system with these boxes that the kids can do follow-ups to kind of keep them going, because that's the hard part. But I think if you get the young ladies excited, then you can take them the rest of the way.
In the past 30 years or so, in terms of encouraging women going into STEM, have we made progress in that area?
We were making progress, but now, especially in computer science and math, the females were starting to slip, and in engineering, they're starting to slip. And it's because it's hard. They're getting into college and they're finding it hard, and they just want to flip to the other side because they want to get through college. We have too many short-term thinkers in this world. You have to think long-term of what is this going to do for me. If we can get people to really focus on that, then I think we can keep more of them in the field. But it's very hard.
Now, I think that the means to an end is hard to communicate to students. And I remember taking some classes in college on fluid mechanics, and I thought, I am never going to use this, and it was hard. But because I knew that what I really wanted to do was try and solve toxics in the water, I thought, I just need to know enough to understand how to solve that problem. And it doesn't mean I have to design the next crazy rocket,
right?
That's where coming back and making sure that people understand that there are different ways of doing STEM, and there are different ways of getting to very interesting careers where you understand the problems. Even if in school you weren't the A student in that area, you understand enough to be really effective. And when you combine that with other skills you have, you can have lots of interesting opportunities.
So how cool is STEM on a scale of 1 to 10, and why?
It's incredibly cool. I was at a robotics competition, and just watching the kids in that room, we were sitting there saying, this is our future, sitting in this room. These kids had a problem to solve in 6 weeks, and they all came up with 49 different robots to solve the problem. They're not basketball players, they're not football players. You know, they're robotics kids, and to see them in their element and taking this forward, these are the kids that we'll try to hire in the future. So it's exciting to me. It's a 10.
Absolutely a 10. You end up putting in a little bit more hard work in the early years in college and grad school, but it pays off in such dividends later on.
So did you or do you have STEM heroes, someone who inspired you as a young lady or perhaps even today?
Dr. Everhart was my first calculus teacher in high school. And she was incredible to me. The way she thought through problems, it was just inspiring. And she took the time to walk me through every calculus problem to understand what it meant. I have always respected her. One day I fell asleep in her class and she took a big stack of books and she threw them on my desk. I'm like, jump. And she's like, Miss Kaiser, you are too smart for this. You will not fall asleep in my class anymore. So she was inspiring
to me.
Yeah. One of my first colleagues at Environmental Defense Fund, Ellen Silbergeld, had a PhD in environmental engineering and was doing phenomenal things on toxicology very early on and really making a difference in people's lives, and went on to win a MacArthur Fellowship and other things. And she was a mother and juggling it all, and I found what she was doing really inspiring.
So my 10-year-old daughter loves math and was just moved up to a more advanced level within her grade. What can I, should I be doing to keep her excited about it?
So the first program, Mindstorm Lego Robotics, and it's a great opportunity for the girls. You tend not to see a lot of girls at robotics competitions. My son goes to all-boys school, but we had a young lady that joined our team because she wanted to get involved in STEM and love robotics. But I think that's a great place for her to get further involved. And then there are so many summer camps if you want to focus on like a science, biology or physics, if you want to focus on a math. Most of the colleges have week-long camps.
What else is she interested in?
Big
animals,
reader.
She loves animals.
I
think in all those places where you can take something she's interested in and show her how science and math have really led to innovations in that field. In veterinary medicine, there's been all kinds of new medicines in wildlife management. They're now using drones, which had to be developed through robotic skills, to find poachers that are coming in, taking wildlife out, showing her how math connects to something else that she loves.
Georgette and Jackie, thank you so much for a fascinating discussion about the importance of STEM in the workplace and society. And to our listeners, Thank you for joining us on Carlisle ValueCast.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, go to our website at www.carlisle.com. This has been a Carlisle ValueCast podcast.